Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Guys, I have some exciting news. Talking Metal is now going to be sponsored. These are small sponsorships, so we would still appreciate you using all the previous forms of supporting us, like the Amazon links and the PayPal donations. We still want all that stuff. We don't want that to end, but we are going to have sponsors. So right now, we're going to get into it. Today's episode is sponsored by Satellite TV, 855-271-MYTV. That's the number you need to call. Again, that's 855-271-6988. It's digital satellite TV. If you have cable now and you're sick of the way cable has been treating you with the quality, with the bills, it's time to go to digital satellite TV. Again, 855-271-MYTV. Get a free four-room system, free DVR or HD upgrade, a free professional installation, 100% digital picture and sound. Plans are under $20 a month. Stop, pause, and rewind with live TV. I mean, that's freaking awesome. When you're watching a sporting game, you want to zip back, or your kid cries and you miss, 10 minutes of Breaking Bad, and you go back in front of the TV, you just freaking rewind it. Catch up, man. That's freaking awesome. I love that. You can even skip over commercials. You don't have to buy any equipment. Discover the satellite TV difference. Call toll-free using the 855 number. Again, 855-271-MYTV. If you are interested in advertising on Talking Metal, you need to check out Podlexing. The web address is podlexing.com, PODLEXING.com. They'll get your commercial placed on Talking Metal and also a bunch of other cool podcasts. So check out the site, podlexing.com, and go get yourself some satellite TV by calling 855-271-6988.
Mark Striegel,
John Astronomy,
the Talking Metal Podcast. Coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly. And now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Zach Wild, Black Label Society. We're all doing a hang, and we're talking metal.
Hey, it's John Astronomy. Welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. I'm here with Mark Striegel at our usual haunt, Starbucks. That's really metal, guys. That's super metal. I'm kidding. Hey, guys, we got a great show for you tonight. We have the return of two Talking Metal family members, both great guitar players, Zach Wild and Metal Mike Klaschuk.
Yeah, so great to have both these guys back on the show. Metal Mike, I don't even know how many times he's been on the show, but Zach's been on at least three times, I'm going to say. Three times, I think. Maybe four, I'm not sure. Two great guys. It's awesome to connect with them again. Right now, let's get into a little Mountain, one of the oldest, most original heavy metal tracks out there. This is Mississippi Queen.
Mississippi Queen. She taught me everything.
What you just heard was Mississippi Queen. Leslie West, of course, a lot of people consider him the first American heavy metal guitar player. I guess Hendrix could maybe fall into that, too. You know, it's debatable, but Leslie, Howard Stern's favorite guitar player, and one of Jimi Hendrix's favorite guitar players before Jimmy passed so many years ago. Leslie West, great. And Leslie recently lost his leg a few years ago to, I guess, diabetes. I'm not sure about that. But we hope Leslie is doing well. We hope to talk with him soon on Talking Metal. We're going to get into our interview that we did with Metal Mike right now. We're going to play some Halford, and we're going to follow that up with an interview with Metal Mike, conducted by myself and Victor Ruiz. Here's a little Halford and Metal Mike.
Metal Mike, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Mike, it's Mark Striegel. How are you?
What's up, Mark? Doing good. What's happening?
Oh, we're excited to be talking to you. Victor, is everything running technically? Cool. Mike, thanks for calling in. We haven't spoken with you for a while on Talking Metal, and it's great to have you back. And we are so psyched because you got a new record out, and it sounds just awesome, man. I'm really, really digging it.
Oh, thanks, man. No. I always think of you guys as my extended metal family without any doubt, you know. So it's we had a chance to hook up and talk, man. I was just like completely up for it. So, yeah, man. Thank you. I'm glad. So far it's been. I think the new album, the Metal Worker, you know, took a good left hand swing on everybody.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I just loved about it is when I put it on, you know, it kicks on with the first track on Leather Wings, and it isn't like some crazy, like, super fast, you know, Engve-style riff. It's just this amazing guitar tone, you know, and you play fast, you can play fast, you can do all the melodic stuff, too, but your tone, man, it just sounds, you captured this just insane guitar tone, and congratulations on that, because a lot of guitar players can play well, but they never get the tone thing down, and especially on album, they never get it down. What were you playing with? Were you going, like, through different effects? Were you playing straight into Marshalls? What were you doing to get that sound?
Yeah, you know, man, you know what? First of all, it's completely awesome that you picked up on that. I mean, of course you would, because I know how how close can you listen to music. But that was the whole idea of the record. You know, first of all, like that intro, I didn't, you know, like I hopefully by now people know I can play guitar, you know, so I don't need to kind of open up a record and prove myself that I could play the latest arpeggios. But and the beginning came off on Leather Wings because I also do feel that a lot of the productions on records these days in the guitar department, they're very cookie cutter, meaning that you could have a lot of different guitar players, but it all sounds the same. It's almost, you know, an amp company comes on the market and everybody uses it, and it's all kind of sounding the same and very digital. And I said, well, I don't want to make records like that, you know? So, you know, because like when we grew up on records, man, like when you put on Metallica's Ride the Lightning or you put on British Steel, or you put on, you know, Rust in Peace, those records had the aura around the guitars.
Right.
They were as distinct as the songs or the vocal lines, and that's the kind of music that I'm interested in playing, you know, more than the notes and more than putting out a record set because I'll have to go on tour in March. So, that's I'm very, very cautious of the guitar sound, but yeah. It was just my Jackson guitars to my Marshall amps, and it was very bare bones, you know?
Yeah, and I think you can hear the Marshalls and the actual real amps as opposed to, you know, what so many people do. They plug through their Sans amp and go directly into their computer, and you just, it's like you're saying, you lose something when you do that, and your album definitely proves that, so congratulations on that. And also, you know, the thing I was surprised when I first put on the record, I was like, oh, Metal Mike, he's a guitar player. You know, this is going to be entirely instrumental. And it's not. There's great vocals on not all the tracks, but a good majority of them have singing on them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, initially I was going to do a record so I could do a six-song release and I could go into... I could have material to go on and do guitar workshops and clinics and stuff. And then I came across Carlos Zima, who used to sing this band Outworld. And I mean, it's, you know, singers like Carlos, they don't, you know, like, I know this sounds cliche, but they don't come around, you know, every day. You know, he's really a tremendous singer. And I said, oh man, well now I got to have Carlos on this record because I'm not going to let him go if I already know. And it's wild, you know, because it's different because my Pain Museum stuff, the vocals were pretty harsh and brutal, and this one, and on the Metal Worker, the music is just as heavy, if not heavier, but the vocals got a tiny bit more cleaner, actually a lot cleaner. So I don't know, man. I also want to make a record that's very listenable. You know, so you could put in the first track and before you know it, the record's over and you heard it from like track one to the last one, you know?
Right. Totally. Victor, you got any questions for Mike?
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting. A lot of the things that you've already touched upon sort of segue into some of the questions that I do have. I think your last point was very fair there, that the album is almost like a musical soundscape where no two songs or no two tracks are alike. And, you know, so many people nowadays, as you're saying, just throw in your typical, you know, sweeps for no reason whatsoever. But you can tell that everything was very well thought out. Everything was well placed. And it sounds as if the album was very organic when it was written. When it comes to doing the instrumental tracks as opposed to the vocal tracks, do you already set out with something in mind to say, you know what, I think this needs Carlos's vocals on it? Or do you say, you know what, I'm going to, you know, shred on this one, or I'm just going to do an instrumental track with this one?
You know what, it's no. I mean, you're very right that the record's organic because it was done, you know, with my guitars and Marshalls, and, you know, I don't like reamp my guitar sounds. You know, a lot of these guys would record a clean tone, and the producer would run it through an amp, and I'm just like, dude, you know, it's not how the greatest records of all time were made, so there's no need to reinvent the wheel on stuff like that. But, you know, I sit down and I try to write the best songs that I can, and it's almost like a symphony of riffs, you know. I'll do one riff, and I'll do another one, and I'll do another one. It's all very riff-based. And if the collection of riffs I might have for a song, let's say, seem to be too busy or crazy to sing over, then I make that song an instrumental song. You know, if the riffs are a little more laid back and have more air, or I could hear vocal melody, then maybe I'll adjust some of the other riffs around it that I'll write to make it more into a vocal song. But I never sit down and think I'm going to write a vocal song or not. You know, I let the music flow through, and then I sort of adjust it after it's all done.
Okay, and is that sort of why you decided to make this a Metal Mike album as opposed to Pain Museum? You said you wanted to make something more listenable, but did you just start out writing tracks and say, you know what, I don't think this is going to fit that mold, so I'm just going to make it something completely different, something that's, you know, under my name?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, you know, because originally I was going to make a record that, you know, had no vocals on it. So I initially started thinking just of my name. And then when I hooked up with Carlos Zima, you know, obviously Carlos has no history with Pain Museum, so I just left it at that. And, you know, and in all fairness, I think people, fans, I guess to some extent, associate my own solo, whatever Metal Mike brand, whatever that might be, it's a little more of a cleaner vocalist range, you know. So I just sort of kind of left it at that. And Pain Museum, you know, it's a little bit of a sleeping dog now, so I didn't really need to go on that. With that said, man, it's funny because that Metal for Life record, you know, when it came out, people were a little bit scratching their heads. Like, the fans loved it, but people were like, well, we thought we were going to do a Halford type record, and why are you going heavy, and this and that. But it's grown into a pretty cool cult followed record by now, and somebody brought it up to my attention that next year is the 10th anniversary of it. So
wow.
It's kind of, yeah, it kind of blows your mind. I'm actually thinking about maybe, I don't know, maybe doing something to coincide with that, or maybe do some sort of a reissue with some extra songs on it, you know?
That means there's extra Pain Museum songs that you guys did that were never released?
No, I would have to go in and do new stuff.
Oh, okay. All right, cool,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So we know you from your great work with Rob Halford and the stuff you did, of course, with Sebastian Bach also. Have you heard from Rob lately?
You know, I mean, we stay in contact roughly here and there. But at the same time, I know when Rob goes back into the Priest world or the working on a new album and stuff, then it sort of is what it is, you know. I mean, we're on very friendly basis, and I've always got along really well with the Metal God, you know. I don't know if it's because we're both from Europe, or I don't know. We share like a lot of the same interest of like World War II history and stuff like that, and so we stay in contact, but I haven't really talked with him very, very recently. I know he had that thing with his back, so I hope he's okay, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask, is there ever a case when you put a track out that someone like Rob Halford, or when you worked with Sebastian Bach, where they say, wow, you know, I wish we could have incorporated that song on my album, or do you just approach each session differently depending on who you're working with?
Yeah, it's funny, you know. I think it comes along that my mind is plugged in into the type of environment I'm in at the time, you know. So if I get asked to write songs for Rob, then I just basically write songs for Rob. But, you know, it's funny because I don't know. This has to do with being a craftsman of songs, but I don't adjust my playing as much to fit a vocalist, which is a double, which is a good and a bad thing, because in Halford, the songs that I wrote, which let's say will be Cyberworld or Golgotha, not full song, but most of it, you could tell they're this sort of like a Metal Mike style song. So I've never really tried to write of what Rob from Priest would sing on, which is a plus and a minus, because then you have less input in the band if you can't write exactly for a vocalist. But you know, it depends how funny things happen, because the song American Metalhead from the Pain Museum's Metal for Life record, I initially brought that song into rehearsal for Halford's Crucible record. It didn't have the lyrics yet. And Rob's management at the time threw the song away. They called it too accepty. And the song never made it onto Crucible.
So
it did make it onto Metal for Life record, and that song was never put out as a single, but it's constantly gets played. You know, I know, because I would get these ASCAP statements from, and I would see like in Australia got shitload of play through some sort of a weird channel like that, like a sports station, and then you would have somebody like Sebastian Bach who lost the song, and we covered it on Sebastian's Angel Down record. So you could see how a song gets rejected, has a life of its own, and then gets covered by other artists, you know?
Yeah. That always reminded me, like, how you did that with Sebastian, like how, you know, Billy Sheehan had that song Shy Boy with Palace, yeah, and then suddenly Roth did a cover on it. It was the same exact thing not the same exact thing, but a similar situation with American Metalhead. Great song, by the way. I love both versions of that. You know, okay. I thought Sebastian did a good job with the vocals on that, too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Cool. So a lot of people might not know that you actually do a lot of instruction and guidance to other guitar players here in New Jersey, and also in a magazine. So let's talk a little bit about that. Are you still doing the School of Rock thing?
Yeah, you know, I'm still pretty involved with School of Rock. It's a very cool organization. You know, it really gives students a lot of ground that they can work on and support. And it's amazing, man. The parents who bring those kids in to study lessons, they're supportive. And, you know, it's one of those things of like, hey, man, you know, I wish I had that when I was growing up, you know. I do an annual metal camp. Actually, I'm going to do one in about a week and a half. We do this yearly camp where kids between 12 and 18 fly in from all over the United States, and they learn, guitar, bass, drums, and vocals. And I have teachers there, and I run the camp, and then the kids get a chance to perform with me on the last night, because we'll basically put on a concert for their parents and sisters. Cool. And brothers. Yeah, it's completely awesome, man. I mean, imagine leaving your house and going to study metal in upstate New York, you know. So it's so great, you know. And then I do a monthly column for Guitar World magazine called Metal for Life, and they told me it was the longest running column the magazine's ever had, which is mind-blowing, you know. And it's crazy. I mean, we released two guitar DVDs. One of them is called Metal for Life, Mastering Heavy Metal, and the other one is 20 Essential Guitar Licks. And I do guitar workshops in New Jersey. It's crazy, man. I didn't know so many people wanted to play metal.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the Guitar World stuff. Now, I haven't seen every single column that you've done, but I've seen some, and they've had like videos, instructional videos that are kind of attached to the column, if you will. Does that happen in every column, or is that just certain columns?
You don't know. It's every column. Every column gets taped on video, and then you go to Guitar World website where they spotlight all the columns from every issue, and you'll pick up the magazine. You'll have the explanation and the music notation tablature, what have you. And then you'll go to the website, and you could watch the video. Cool. So, you know, it's cool. You know, I cover, it's maybe not the right word to call it, but I cover the meat and potatoes of heavy metal, you know?
Yeah.
So I won't be showing you like 10-finger tapping or how to make a power chord, but the stuff in between. And,
right.
You know, that's 95% of people who play guitar, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Putting these DVDs together and working with Guitar World, has that helped maybe with your playing or helped you sort of re-envision some of the stuff that you had been doing?
Well, it does, because I have to think through my playing, and it reminds me of stuff and also makes me think of what I wanted to learn when I was a kid, you know? So, you know, great teachers are great students again, you know? And when they asked me to do it, I said, man, great. I'll do like 3 columns and this is all I'm going to know. Cause you know, I never thought of myself as the heavy metal guitar playing guru. You know, I just played guitar. And then it hit with people and I was like, man, now I'm going to need more stuff. So, but luckily it's been, you know, I've been having all those thoughts of ideas that I've been putting together. So it does help, you know, when I have to break down an example in a really slow tempo and I have to think of, well, what is exactly my left hand or right hand doing? How what's the coordination? What's the subdivision of groups? So it really teaches you to break down your stuff, you know, and if I have to play a really fast riff, really slow to a click, you know, I have to rethink what I'm doing, and then all your any weaknesses will pop up, you know. So I'm able to practice on some stuff. So it's been really beneficial.
Now, Mike, you've done some, I guess, live gigs, which unfortunately I was not able to attend, but they you have to tell me about them. They were with Jim Brewer, the guy most of us know from Saturday Night Live, and he's also on Sirius Satellite Radio. How did you hook up with Jim, and what were these shows all about?
You know, it's pretty wild stuff. Like Jim, I think I did an interview on Jim's radio show Brewer Unleashed on XM. I think I was actually with Rob. We were doing some press. And then I roughly stayed in touch with Jim. And I got a call. He called me not too long ago, and he's got this idea. It's almost like a production of this guy called The Metal Man. So you'll have you know, you'll have Jim when the first half of the presentation, when Jim comes out and tells us heavy metal stories about, you know, James Hetfield and Bible School, and how he used to hang out with Lars Ulrich in Manhattan, and all these crazy funny stories. And then we'll do a musical part, which is where I come in, you know, and we'll there's some original songs. There's also some songs such as Bingo that's rewritten in a heavy metal style that,
right.
You know, if 12-year-old kids show up to this presentation, they could dig it too, you know, because, you know, everybody's saying they want to keep the metal alive. Well, if we're going to keep metal alive, we've got to teach the kids about it, you know? It's like,
yeah, absolutely.
So I was like, oh, dude, I'm like, Jim, I don't want to play bingo, dude. Like, you know, I'm Metal Mike. Like, I'm not going to play bingo heavy metal style. So I was, right. I had a little bit of a struggle with it. But, you know, Jim is pretty sincere on his love for heavy metal, you know?
Right. Yeah, you can tell that.
You know, and I'm like, well, this guy's real. He's not, I don't dig the comedian, ha-ha, funny heavy metal guy, like, because heavy metal is so close to my heart that, you know, I don't find it funny. Like, I know right. a lot of people.
I mean,
do,
I remember you telling me a long time ago, you don't find Steel Panther too funny.
Yeah, I don't think Steel Panther is funny. I mean, I think the funny, laughable way, and I don't even care what they do, you know, but when they use the word heavy metal attached to it, then it's sort of like, you know, no, you guys are not heavy metal, you know. You
right.
might have been in heavy metal bands when you were 18, but you're not heavy metal. So I want them to leave that particular word out of whatever they do. Yeah. So you know what? So I don't really, I don't do the whole heavy metal haha stuff, but. But Jim is serious, and I'm like, you know what? You're so crazy that you're actually serious about what you're doing. But see, that's the reason why Hetfield or the Metal God dig Jim Brewer, because they get that, you know, they get that he's genuine. And I'm like, all right, dude, I'll do the bingo thing. So we did it, and people loved it. So so it's been very cool, man. You know, it's different. You know, it's different for me. You know, it's interesting. I don't obviously there are some bands that will always join in any day of the week, but I don't really look at myself as a guy who is going to get a call in and I'm just going to go in and be a guitar player for hire in a band. So I could play somebody else's songs and help build other people's empires, you know?
Yeah.
You know. If we're talking about Megadeth or Ozzy or Guns N' Roses, I'm there. But I'm not, you know, I'm kind of picky. So I enjoy, dude, you don't know how much I love sitting in my office and thinking what kind of a workshop I'm going to do. And I know it's totally up to me if I could get 5 people to attend or 12 people. And, like, the destiny is in my own hands, you know, and or whatever I want to do. But with Jim... you know, I'm like, this is just so crazy enough that I'm down with it because it's not a band, you know, it's Jim Brewer and I get to do whatever I get to do, whatever Absolutely. I want to do. So it's been very cool. But anyway, man, I know this is a long answer, but next year we are going to do a whole lot more of that.
Okay.
And we're having some serious plans for next year to take the Metal Man on the road.
Yeah, I've even heard, I don't know if I should even say this, but I've heard that there's some talk of turning it into a TV show. I don't think anything's finalized yet, but that would be cool. I don't know if that's exactly what you're working with Jim on, but I heard he was talking with TV networks about doing something.
Yes. Well, I can't comment on that, but, you know, because I don't know, it's not really my part. But as far as taking Metal Man on the road and doing festivals and doing like a real touring with a release, you know, that's what we're talking about.
Okay. Well, we will definitely be sure to check it out when you do your next show in New Jersey. And I was hanging out with John earlier, and he sends his love. He misses you, and he wants to come over and drink some beers at your house. So hopefully we can do that sometime soon.
Yes. Hell yeah, we can.
Cool. So, Mike, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to link your Facebook page. We're going to have links up to your site in the podcast version of this on talkingmetal.com. The site, of course, is metalmike.net. The new music is on iTunes. It sounds great. We're going to end with a song right now. What do you got queued up there, Victor? What are we going to play?
M is for metal.
Yeah. This one actually is an instrumental, and it's a great one.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it's got...
catchy.
Yeah, and it starts with a guitar riff that kind of brings back. I don't know, man. I hate to talk about backwards things or brings back, but you know, you love what you love, you know, and you know the songs we love, and you have those guitar riffs that you're like, oh man, this is like the greatest thing ever, you know, just singing guitar. It's great riffage, you know, and that's what I'm missing too, man. I'm missing songs in today's world when there's guitar riffs and tones. You know what I'm saying? So, man, I'm glad that you guys picked up on it. And I thank you so much for, you know, for having my back on this. It means a lot.
Yeah, it is a great record, guys. One of the strongest metal releases I've heard this year so far. It'll probably definitely be showing up on my top 20 at the year's end. And again, it's not just, you know, crazy guitar playing. It's just rich sounds, heavy, rich sounding guitars, and a lot of singing, too, which is always... always refreshing, and I think people relate to having a voice on songs. So definitely worth checking out this record, and we will have links up in today's show notes. Again, the record is called The Metal Worker, mm-hmm. and it is by Metal Mike. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
What you just heard was M is for Metal from the Metal Worker album by Metal Mike.
Cool. Great to talk with Metal Mike again. And great to talk with Zach Wild again. We met up with Zach during the day. Where was it? It was like some school or something, right, John?
Yeah, it was called the Collective, and it was formerly known as the Drummers Collective, but now they do more than just drums there. And it's a pretty cool place. It was down on between 14th and 15th Streets in Manhattan. And it was a very cool place. A lot of musicians coming in and out. And special thanks to Carol Kay and Rob Gill, who helped us out in putting the interview together. And it was really great. They sent us away with like an entire catalog of like Zach stuff and Black Label stuff, which is very cool.
Vinyl and CDs and DVDs. It was great. It was great. It was like Christmas morning in there.
Yeah, and I even got some more when I went back. They did like a second part of it, which was a kind of like a almost like a press event where they had different people screening the video and listening to some tracks, and Zach was talking, and Brad Tolinsky from Guitar World magazine was there as the moderator, and it was very, very cool. And Zach was there, and you know who I saw and who I just said hello to, but you know
who's that?
Nick Bocott, remember him from
No.
Grim Reaper guitar player?
Oh yeah, of course, very cool, Grim Reaper. Cool. Well, we're going to get into some Black Label right now, and then we're going to come back, talk a little more, and then get into the interview with Zach. What do you got Black Label-wise, John?
Let's hear Concrete Jungle from Shot to Hell, which is right when we started to hang out with Zach, so I always like that song.
What you just heard was a little Black Label Society with Zach Wild here on Talking Metal. John attended the concert. You had a good time hanging out at the concert in New York City. Where was it? Hammerstein?
Yeah, it was at Hammerstein. It was really cool. Before the show, I was hanging out with the drummer and checking out his practice kit where he had some DW9000 pedals. It was very cool. And he wants to come on Talking Metal, too, so we'll get him on very soon. And Mark, you went to an amazing concert while I was away. I'm totally jealous. Black Sabbath, tell us about it.
Yeah, Black Sabbath was great. You know, there had been some clips circulating online from the Texas shows where Ozzy definitely sounded out of tune. I will tell you, as everybody else who was tweeting from the show and on Facebook from the show will also tell you, Ozzy was almost 100% in tune. I'd say 95% in tune throughout the whole show. I'm not making it up. Everybody always accuses me of defending Ozzy no matter what, which I'll admit to. But I'm not making it up. He was right on pitch-wise
maybe one or two little areas where he strayed a little bit, but for a 66-year-old guy, he sounded great. Came out, opened with War Pigs. They did much more new material than was expected, at least than I was expecting. They even did a song off the bonus CD, the Best Buy bonus CD that was included with 13, called Methodemic, which we're going to play a little sound sample of later on today's episode. So fun stuff, and always great to see Ozzy, Geezer, and Tony. Great stuff. Tommy sounded great, too. And Andrew WK did a DJ set where he DJ'd before the show, which was also a lot of fun. A lot of great songs. He even did New York Groove by Ace in the DJing set, and the crowd was all cheering for that. So fun stuff. So right now, John, why don't you take us into the Zach interview?
Sounds great, Mark. Why don't we hear the song Desire by Ozzy Osbourne, of course, featuring Zakk Wylde.
This is Mark Striegel along with John Astronomy of Talking Metal, and we have a very special guest, Zakk Wylde. We haven't seen you in a couple of years. How you been, man?
I just can't wait to talk about metal.
We can't either. So, Zakk, we're here today to talk about the new Unblackened DVD and double CD, and I got a chance to check it out, and it's really amazing, man.
I appreciate it. If you hear any of that noise in the background, that's a Black Label sweatshop we have here, and we have them writing all the new hit songs for the next upcoming Black Label studio album. But next question.
So here's the thing. Some people might hear Unblackened and think, what is this, an acoustic record? But it's not acoustic. It's full-on electric, but it's just some of the songs that lend themselves to more of a less heavy vibe, right?
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, you know, so some of the obviously on a slower, the mellower songs are just... Yeah, because you have electric solos and stuff like that, and there's some power chords and stuff like that. So, actually, the renditions that are on the record, you know what I mean? So, as opposed to like a stripped-down thing where I'm just sitting behind a piano and playing a song without the drums, strings, and all that stuff. So, but it came about because we were doing you know, we got approached to do another DVD with Eagle and everything like that. And so we had Booze, Bruise, and Broken Bone, you know, with the Detroit chapter. Then we did the Doom Trooping over Europe and everything like that. So instead of doing another heavy one, because, you know, our Black Label family's always just asking. They're like, going, when are you clowns going to do, like, one of the mellow ones? You know, because we dig the mellow stuff, but you guys only play, like, you know, we'll do Dime Song Live, wheel the piano out, and then do, like, just another mellow song, you know, Spoken a Wheel or something like that. But then, you know, they're like, when are you going to do just, like, you know, just an evening with the mellow stuff? So that's how that came about, and that's why we put this one thing together.
And this is two separate releases, right? It's a DVD and then CD release,
yeah,
exactly. Right?
Because, you know, so you have one coaster for your beer and the other one for your shot of whiskey or whatever the hell else you're drinking, you know, to get blasted into oblivion while you stick this CD and DVD on and treat your body like the amusement park that it is.
And is there any song difference between the DVDs, like what songs are on the DVD and what songs are on the CD?
It's just it's the live show, you know what I mean? So that's what it is.
Very cool.
Now, you know what I like about
Actually, on the CD, there's bonus tracks on the CD, actually, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, because what we ended up doing was, you know, I arranged string parts, myself, with the cello, the viola, and violins for about a month on about 29 songs. And then, but when we had the string quartet come down, it was a disastrous Black Label disaster of Titanic, Hindenburg-esque proportions. I'm just saying, we're listening to this like basically a wedding quartet band trying to play to our stuff. And you know, if you took the sheet music away from like when there's improv stuff in the beginning or outros of some of the songs when I'm just soloing, they're like, what do we do here? They were like, and they're union guys, so that we only have them for 2 hours. And I'm like, we can stay for an extra hour or so, you know, obviously if you pay us another 10 grand or whatever it is. And I go like this, guys, we don't need you for an extra hour or 2 hours. We need you for an extra, like, month and a half for you guys to learn all these songs properly, for us to record these things. I go, forget about it. That's when I said, Clance, you know, Derek Serenian, you know, Father Clancy over there. I go, Derek, you're going to have to do all the string bits on this thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah, the Mellotron, the Hammond, and all, you know, and obviously with those other keys that he could actually, you know, that had strings pads in there. So that's how we worked our way around that thing.
Very cool. You know, now the DVD starts out with a Pride and Glory track, and I like that this whole Unblackened project kind of spans your entire career.
Yeah, well, it's got the because everybody always asks that, are you ever going to play any of the P&G stuff? Are you going to play the Book of Shadows stuff or whatever? You know, so, and, you know, I mean, the thing is with Black Label, we have 9 albums now, so we have enough material to, you know. I mean, we don't have as much of a problem as the Stones do, you know, I mean, with the 6,582 songs, you know what I mean? But we have enough material to do. That's why we never end up touching, you know, the P&G stuff or the Book of Shadows stuff. So, no, it was actually cool playing a lot of those songs because I haven't played them since, like, 94 or whatever, you know. Right. So it was definitely cool.
Cool. And we also wanted to catch up on some of the other stuff you've been up to. You had a book that came out earlier this year, Bringing Metal to Children. Can you talk a little bit about what that actually is? It's not your life story or anything. It's more like...
Well, I a bunch of my buddies have written books, you know, like autobiographies, which are way cool and everything like that. So, you know, when we were talking about doing this book, I said, no, let's just write, like, you know, a George Carlin Black Label on steroids ridiculous book of... Which isn't... I don't have to look for material because it's... just living and breathing and being in the music business. So there's just, trust me, a plethora of material that just lands in your lap and you don't have to go searching for it. So, it was just about writing about the ridiculousness of it. And then, you know, we were just talking about how silly it is. And then we were just going, well, we got to stick some advice in there, like what not to ever do, because Uncle Zach tried it. And it, trust me, it didn't work then and it won't work now. So, you know, I'm just reliving those horrific experiences of going through the harrow. It's very therapeutic as we were just laughing our balls off the whole time we were, you know, writing this stuff. I mean, Eric, we're literally crying, laughing when right. we were writing this book. I literally, like when we tell the story when we were printing it, I mean, literally crying when we were writing it. So that's why I said the book just has to be that from the beginning to the end.
Cool. And you're out in the road right now on Gigantour 2013. How are the shows going?
We're having a blast. I mean, everybody, you know, it's super cool. Dave, you know, Father Mustaine invited us out on the thing, so because we're having a blast. I mean, I'd always see Dave throughout the years, whether, you know, we're doing festivals or whatever like that, just running into him, you know. So it's cool, but we'd never done any shows together, so it was definitely cool to do that. And then obviously with Vincenzo over there with Hell Yeah and the Fellas, same thing with them. We've always done gigs with them, like a festival type of setting. And then Father Draymond, you know, we've seen Dave when on the Ozfests and stuff like that. So, and obviously Father Newstead, I jammed with him with Ozzy, you know what I mean? So it was like one gigantic high school reunion, you know, dysfunctional high school reunion, no less. But, I mean, it's been a great time, man.
Cool. And we saw you out on stage with Ozzy again last year, 2012. You did the Ozzy and Friends tour. I guess that was mostly in Europe, right? How did that go for you?
That was great, man. You know, same thing. You know, seeing Slash again because I'm good buddies with Slash, and I love him. He's, you know, so it was great seeing him and the Fellas. So, no, like I said, once again, that was win-win as well. You know, and then get a chance to hang out with the Boss and the rest of the Fellas, you know.
You were even on stage with Axl a couple times back in 2011. We saw some clips of you doing a whole lot of Rosie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, that was way cool. Axl was like, Zach, you want to come up and jam? I said, yeah, what tune you want to do? He's like, well, what about, and I was like, because I saw they did a whole lot of Rosie or something like that. I go, well, let's do a whole lot of Rosie. I mean, I'm saying, because, you know, we pretty much know that one. There's only, I think there's about three chords involved in that song. So, you know, let's just stick with that and keep it simple. But that was a great time seeing him and going out, you know, because I'm friends with all the guys in the band and stuff like that. So, like I said, it's always a good time when we get invited to go out and do these things.
So one of the cool things about the Unblackened DVD is that you've added some musicians like Derek Sherinian on piano and Mellotron and all the other cool stuff. But one of the things I think is really cool is that when you're playing piano, Nick does some soloing. And I think it's really cool for the Black Label fans to hear you on piano with Nick doing some guitar solos.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that's why I call him the evil twin. Because, I mean, like when we have the double solos or anything, Nick can double everything I'm doing. Or the solos that I'm not playing, Nick can do them. You know, he's not just a rhythm guy. You know what right. I mean? So he could solo and stuff like that, and he's got chops. So, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that's what's awesome about having Nick in the band.
Yeah, you know, one of the pieces on the CD is you playing Chet Atkins, classical, and Derek, you guys are doubling everything.
Oh, yeah, that's everything. A football thing, yeah. You know, it's just, well, you know, it's basically our love of Al DiMeola and Chick Corea and all the guys in Return to Forever and all the fusion guys. So, yeah, that's what that pretty much is.
You know, I don't know if, I mean, the Black Label fans and the Zach Wild fans know that you can pretty much play anything, but I don't know if everybody knows that you can do that fusion stuff, too.
Well, that's why, I mean, I love that stuff. So, I mean, it's like, you know, obviously I started off with Elton John, then found Sabbath and Zeppelin and, you know, the Bad Company and Skinner and Allmans and all, you know, all classic rock and stuff like that. But you know, when playing guitar, obviously learning Sabbath and, you know, all my favorite stuff, and then Randy and everything like that, then my guitar teacher turned me on to, you know, as you're progressing, it's just like, oh, check out the, you know, that's when you start getting into fusion, you know, Al DiMeola, John McLaughlin, and then Paco and, you know, Alan Holdsworth. You start finding that about all these jazz guys and fusion guys. So, you know, it was like some of my friends started getting into the punk thing or whatever, whether it's Black Flag and all. I, like, missed the boat on that because I was too busy getting into the fusion thing, you know.
That's killer stuff. You got to really have the chops to do that stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just a different type of thing, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, all the guys I just mentioned, John McLaughlin, you know, Al DiMeola, and I mean, this is some of my favorite players, without a doubt.
Now, you mentioned a guitar teacher. Did you have one specific teacher you studied with back when you were a kid?
Right. When I was in Jersey, you know, so he's my football coach, Mr. Wright. He was his son. He was about 10 years older than me. So, yeah, it was great taking lessons from him, you know. So, yeah, because and all his friends were amazing musicians, too. So when I'd end up sitting there watching him, it was like pretty much going to this place. Like just seeing, to literally see it firsthand, you know, just like amazing guys playing, it just mind-blowing.
Now, the DVD has some, not only, the CD has the bonus tracks, but the DVD has bonus footage, and there's a really cool interview with you. There's the Pride and Glory video, but there's something else that's really cool. You went to a prison in the UK, and I love it that you had those Zach Wild, those small marshals, and like a wall of the little marshals, and you played guitar and told stories. How was that, and how did that come about?
No, a bunch of our buddies are... you know, in law enforcement and stuff like that, Black Label Brothers. So, I guess there was a bunch of guys that were going to be getting out, on good behavior. And I guess they'd been in there for misdemeanors and stuff like that. But, just trying to turn their life around and everything like that. So it was like, oh, Zach, would you mind coming down and just talking with the guys, jamming with them or something like that? Because the guys are really trying to turn things around or whatever. So I said, yeah, no problem, man. So it's all positive and it's all win-win. So the guys are getting out and they just want to, turn their lives around. And, they know they messed up, but it's just like, fix things and get it together and get it right. So, yeah, it was cool.
Without giving anything away, because we want people to watch the footage, there was a really funny story about Mark, and the guy was saying, what are you stuttering? And could you just set that up a little bit?
Wait, which story are you talking about?
It's the one where the guy goes, I'm a cop, and I think Mark goes, I don't care if you're a cop, you're going to be laid out.
The promoter or something like that, or a cop or something like that. He goes, yeah, and he's our tour manager, Mark, my brother-in-law. And he was just getting hot or whatever. And the guy goes, what are you fucking stuttering or something? Because he was like, motherfucker, something like that. And he goes, what? Just taking a piss, stuttering. He goes, I don't give a shit or whatever. He goes, if you're a fucking cop or not, I'm going to come down and break your fucking legs if you see him. And then we'll see who's fucking stuttering then. But it's fucking brutal, dude. But yeah, dealing with promoters and all this bullshit is fucking comedy, man.
I never realized this, but do you have to watch when you're dealing with certain promoters in other countries? I heard stories about, people handing somebody the money, and then, 5 minutes later, there's two guys that are going to take the money. Ever have anything like that happen?
It's just like anything, It really is like any other business or porn or, when you're watching, porn stars or something. They'll just try and scam you on, if they get – it's always one of those things where if you ask your parents, you're terrified to ask for $20, when you're a kid, and they go, and dad goes, here's 40, here, go have a good time, You never know until you ask, but it's always a big scam, to try and scam some money off the top, It just, put it this way, like I always say, in the music business, it's a big room full of stinking turds and shit everywhere. So, when we go in that room, don't sit here and go, oh, it stinks in here. I know, I told you, there's shit all over the place. And you're going to sit here and fucking whining that it fucking stinks. It's just the fucking music business, dude. So fucking roll your fucking sleeves up and Black Label patting the fuck up. And let's keep moving here.
Fucking ridiculous, man. So, Zach, you're doing a show on Sirius now, right?
Yeah, we have the radio show. We're probably going to be sitting this one out for this season, because I've been on the road and I couldn't do the draft and everything like that for the fantasy draft for the Wild on Sports. But, we did win the fantasy draft and we won the $5,000 check to go to St. Jude's. So, yeah, we are the champions and the Miz owes me that trophy. So that's that.
This is a sports show, not a music show, but do you occasionally talk about music on the show?
Guys, we talk about everything, whether it's music, whatever's going on in the news and stuff like that. And we talk about sports. So, whether we had the fantasy football draft, we'd be talking about baseball when, with baseball season going on and everything like that. So, or whatever sport was going on, hockey, basketball, anything like that.
And what Sirius station is it on?
Actually, I got to look it up on my phone right now. I'll tell you that one in a second.
I wanted to ask you, as a sports fan, your thoughts on the big A-Rod thing that's currently going on.
Well, here, it's fantasy here. I got it right here. There you go, Wild on Sports. It was on XM 87 and Sirius 210.
Cool.
So, but with the A-Rod thing,
yeah.
I just thought it's kind of weird. Didn't he just go through this 4 years ago when the Yankees won the World Series? Remember, he came out and he said, I tried it for a while and, it was wrong of me and I shouldn't have done it. He goes, but I just noticed it wasn't making – my numbers weren't going up, and it wasn't like I was hitting the ball any further, so I just, stopped doing it. Maybe I wasn't even doing it right to begin with. We weren't even taking the right stuff, so who knows if it was even phony. But he goes, I'm not on anything right now, so whatever. So, and it just seemed like it was over. Then it was like, oh, I guess he came out, and he didn't lie, and now everyone's fine with that. Now, all of a sudden, now they're going after him again. So I don't understand it, dude. I really don't.
Yeah.
Put it this way, if he takes a piss test and a blood test right now and a hair sample and there's nothing in his system, then who the fuck cares?
Right.
And put it this way, does anyone have any blood, hair, or urine samples from whenever they thought he was taking it in 2001, 2002? It's like, no, we don't have any evidence. I go, well, then what the fuck? How can you put this guy in jail? You don't have the murder weapon. You don't have any blood. You don't have any evidence, no fingerprints. You don't have anything.
OJ!
Without a doubt. But what I'm just saying is, no, but OJ, you had evidence. A-Rod, they have no evidence. No, you don't have any evidence on my guy. I'm just saying, if I'm the agent, I go, what do you have on my guy? Whether it's Mark McGwire or whether it's Sammy Sosa or whatever. And it's like, oh, well, you know, we hear that they're taking it. I go, well, that's fine. You can hear. And you know what else I heard? I heard A-Rod robbed two banks, and he also was, you know, he was involved with, the Titanic disaster. You know, I mean, it's just like, well, he wasn't even born then. It's like, well, I heard.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what the fuck does that mean? Yeah. I mean, like, no, but what concrete proof do you have? I mean, do you have proof that Pete Rose was gambling on, you know, we have to have proof of him filling out forms or slips or actually putting money against his team or whatever. Right. You can't just say that he's betting on baseball.
Yeah.
Well, I heard. You know, I saw him. It's like, do you have a picture of him doing it? No. But I saw him. Well, then go fuck yourself. You don't have any proof. Then, no, I just don't understand it. I really don't understand what the fuck's going on. Because they don't have any proof. They can't go, oh, in 2001 we have blood samples from him and urine samples and we have a hair analysis. And he was on steroids. He was taking Deca, Winstrol. He was taking growth hormone. It's like, all right, well, have him take a blood test right now. It's like, he did. There's nothing in him. I go, then why are we even having this conversation? This is like ridiculous, man.
Yeah, he appealed, so he can still play until the whole appeal process. Yeah, he played last night in Detroit, right?
Yeah, but it's like ridiculous, though. I'm like, what proof do you have?
It could be worse. It could be Jordani Valspin on the Mets, who admitted to taking steroids, is busted, fined for the 200-something game, and he had a fucking 188 batting average. How do you take steroids and still have a 188 batting? At least if you're going to do the shit, let it work, you know?
No, but I mean, steroids aren't going to help you hit a baseball.
True.
Barry Bonds, the only thing that did it for Barry Bonds, if they're saying Barry Bonds was all jacked up, is it just made him stronger. So, but he still has to hit the ball.
Right. He's still got to have the eye coordination to hit the ball.
So basically, what would have happened is that a lot of the shots maybe would have been warning track shots as opposed to 20 feet over the fence.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but he is still making contact with the ball. So you can't take that away from them. So, you know, whatever, dude. I mean, I just think if they're going to, at this point, let all the guys be under a doctor's supervision and so they're not killing themselves and they're doing it legally and everyone has the option to do it if they want or not. Because you know what? You're eating clean. You're taking, you're getting adequate rest. You're lifting weights. You're eating the proper foods. You're not eating McDonald's every day. And you're eating clean and you're eating protein shakes and you're taking all your vitamins and supplements and everything you can to improve your performance. So I would just lump the steroids in there with the dosages that your doctor would give you, like testosterone. How you can get, you know, when you're 60 years old, you're taking testosterone shots to increase your testosterone levels for well-being. So what is that going to be illegal? Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, if it's under a doctor's supervision, the doctor's making sure your liver isn't flying out of your body and, you know, you're not going to die of a heart attack. It's like, I don't understand the problem. So, and then, you know, once the guys are done playing, they could, you know, they got the option to go, oh, I don't even take anything anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It's like Arnold after he was competing in the Mr. Olympia, he's done. He's not roiding anymore. I don't need to because I don't need to be 265 pounds anymore. You know? I mean, I can't wait till they drug test the NFL. There will be no NFL. It'll be gone. Because even the field goal kickers are probably jacked up so they can get an extra 15, 20 yards on a field goal. It's not that they have to be benching 650 or look as big as a middle linebacker. It's like, dude, no way the kicker's saying. He goes, yeah, because he was usually kicking 48-yard field goals. Now he's back up. He can kick about a 59, you know, 60-yard field goal. Take him off the roids. He's back down to about a 48-yard field goal. So what do you think a field goal kicker's going to do?
Right, he's going to take him.
Hey, to keep his job. So there you go. So, whatever, dude. I really don't understand. I just think it's really silly. And I just think it's like, then if you're going to test everybody at the beginning of the month and the middle and the end of the month, three blood tests every month.
Right.
So you really want to clean the sport up, but they don't want to do that.
Right.
Because that means everyone in the sport will be out. We won't have a sport. So that's why I think it's such bullshit that you go after Mark McGwire because he's a big dude. You know, he is lifting weights still, and he's still eating like a horse, and he's still doing everything that you would do if you were a professional bodybuilder.
Right.
So, enough of the bullshit, you know what I mean? And Mark's still got to hit the ball.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, steroids will not help you hit a baseball. Flat out, dude.
Exactly. So, Zach, one of the things we wanted to talk about is the deluxe edition that you can get through the website. Tell us about that.
Well, what's the deluxe edition? What do you got going in there now? What new crap are you sticking in the
DVD.
Viagra.
The CD.
The Cialis.
The necklace.
The necklace, yes.
Yeah. The photo book.
Oh, the photo book. Oh, that Dustin Jack did. Okay.
Preparation H, since you
for all the Buffalo Bills fans.
You're sitting down for the whole show. We figured.
Oh, some Preparation H. Oh, there you go. We're always thinking health first.
Cool, man.
Guys, we will have links up where you can pre-order this stuff and buy this stuff on the site, talkingmetal.com, in the show notes for this episode. So definitely go visit there, and we'll link you right over to the unblackened DVD and CD.
Yes.
There was another guy that was involved, Greg, in the unblackened.
Yeah,
and tell us about him.
Greg's in JD's band, and he's the lead singer in Cycle of Pain. So, you know, that's why I said we all just keep it in-house and everything like that. It's just like, J.D., why don't we ask Greg if he wants to do background vocals on it? And, like, certain parts when I have doubled, you know, when I double my vocal on the records and stuff like that, we'll get Greg to double me and then do the harmonies. So it worked out great. Greg did a great job, man.
Did you know Derek back when, you know, you were living in Jersey when you were in high school?
I met Derek, like, early on with Ozzy because he was playing with Alice Cooper at the time. But also, I think Derek, he's a Berkeley guy as well, and JD's right. A Berkeley guy. So they've known each other since then. And so it's like, it was just one gigantic brotherhood. You know, we've known each other forever.
Did you know Derek up at Berkeley? Because we knew JD, because Mark and I went to Berkeley.
Yeah,
we knew
Derek's a Berkeley guy, too.
Derek, I don't know when he was there.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. So let's talk about when the DVD and CD are coming out. September, is it?
September 24th, yeah.
Cool.
So, guys, look for the new unblackened DVD and CD, two separate packages.
Yes, one supports my the DVD supports my Viagra habit, and the CD supports my Cialis habit. So if you can get both, the wife will be extremely happy. Thank you.
Speaking of your wife, the video she did with Shatner.
I'm just keeping it honest.
The video she did with Shatner, that was one of the best laughs I had all year. That was great stuff.
About her having some oral delights with Captain Kirk. Yes, it was her, when she was putting his phaser to fun. But I set your phaser to fun. Actually, when they did the rose, when I saw that. That was the first time I had seen that as well. I had no idea she did it. So I was laughing my balls off.
I was crying. I was like tearing. It was so funny.
Coming up, wiping her mouth, and then, you know, Father Shatner going, "All right, Barbara Ann, you can go back down there and finish the job."
We will link that video through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com.
Zach, well, thanks for taking the time to hang out with us today. We love hanging with you, and we love jamming with you, and you're part of the Talking Metal family. We feel like we're part of the Zach Wild Black Label family.
Hands down. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you. We'll be right back. That was Losing Your Mind by Pride and Glory, featuring the one and the only Zach Wild. Yeah, that was a great interview with Zach. It was really cool to hook back up with him, and Zach was in a great mood, as usual.
Great, great. And guys, as I mentioned at the very top of the show, we now have sponsors. Please support those sponsors. They're the way you're going to keep us alive here on Talking Metal. The other ways you can do it is by purchasing a t-shirt in the store section on TalkingMetal.com, giving us a like on our Facebook page, using the iTunes links in today's show notes on TalkingMetal.com. Those open up your iTunes, take you directly to the songs that you're hearing on today's episode. And we, of course, get a cut back on those purchases. And also the Amazon link. Somewhere, someone right now is about to make a purchase on Amazon. Before you go to Amazon.com, just go to Talking Metal. Use our Amazon links to open your, to take you to Amazon. And then just search the product you want to purchase. It doesn't matter what it is. You won't be charged any additional money for using our site to, you know, as a portal to Amazon. And we get a little kickback on that. Actually, a pretty decent kickback. So please support Talking Metal by using our Amazon links. You'll find those in today's show notes for this episode. Right now, we'll end with Methodemic, a track which I heard Black Sabbath play in their set last Sunday in New Jersey. It sounded great, and it is on the bonus CD that if you get the deluxe version of 13, the new Black Sabbath record, you will get this song. It's kind of interesting. They were playing a song off the bonus CD.
That is really wild, because usually at live shows, the bands want to play like their most popular songs, yeah. And here is a song that, you know, not everybody's going to have because it's on a bonus CD.
Yeah, true, and it's a great song. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of Heaven and Hell. Most of the songs on 13, to my ears, have this old school Sabbath sound. Whereas this song, it has some of that, but it also has a more modern feel to me, as the last Heaven and Hell record did. The Devil You Know. So let's check this out right now. Methodemic, Ozzy, Geezer, and Tony with Brad on drums on this one. Brad, of course, did not do the live show with them.